Add WFAN to your contacts to talk New York sports with us at 888-808-1019. Powered by AT&T Business.
All right, 204. Sorry. 204. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. 2 hours down, three more to go on our five-hour midnight ride. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Talked a lot about baseball. I just heard, the J.D. Martinez going back to that team meeting. I mean, God bless his heart. I guess the meeting certainly helped him as he's been good, and hopefully for the New York Mets, he's going to up his trade value because I think that's probably where the season's headed. And there are talking about, for the Yankees trying to find a reliever. I mean, and that trade and what they're going to do at first base. I mean, the Mets right now are in a position, I feel like, in a really good position if they are so inclined to trade away some pieces and get a decent amount back, as we saw last night. And that's how I feel about the Mets watching that game last night, where there are two distinct ways to look at this Mets season, depending on how you feel. Depending on what kind of Met fan you are, and believe I've talked to both of you. If you are the positive Met fan, if you believe the season can still be special, or at least a playoff team, which, hate to be the jerk, but that is special for the Met franchise. If you feel like, hey, we're only a couple games out of the wild card, let's find out exactly where we are today, right now at the wild card. The Mets are currently 3 games out of the wild card. Still games, 3 games. But, I mean, you are behind the National, the Pirates, the Diamondbacks, the Cubs, the Reds, the Cardinals, and the Giants. So, I mean, that's a lot of teams to jump. But it is only 3 games. And if you are the positive fan that still believes in this team, that, hey, Senga just threw a bullpen and feels good, maybe he's coming back. Diaz came back in this game last night and has been given the closer's role, which I agree with. And hopefully just being gone for a while, whether it's because of injury or anything else, he comes back, has a clean inning. Hopefully his confidence, which is what feels like about 80% of the problem is, hopefully his confidence can be rebuilt here just with some time away. But ultimately, there's a lot of pieces on. I mean, so if you feel like this is the, excuse me, I jumped right into the other side. If you still feel like this is the kind of team that can get hot, you got J.D. Martinez hitting, a huge home run here to avoid the disastrous series loss to the Marlins. Instead, you've now gone 4 series without a series loss, playing 1-8 out of their last 12. J.D. Martinez coming through. Marte's kind of gotten hot. Lindor's been playing much better as of late. You still have a Nimmo problem. You still have a McNeil problem. You still have an Alonso problem. You still have a bullpen problem, even with Diaz returning. But Alvarez is back. You're just getting into the swing of that. Like, there's some good vibes. That was a big win. And then even if you're the other kind of Met fan, it was a good night for you because Severino continues to pitch well, and I absolutely think there is a major market for a pitcher with his track record, his stuff, still throwing 98 miles an hour in this game. I mean, there's definitely a market for him as a starting pitcher. I think there's definitely a market for Manaea. There's less of a market for Quintana. J.D. Martinez, if he continues to hit like this, is someone who can clearly be traded and thrusted into the middle of a lineup of a pennant race. Like, and if you allow David Stearns to do this, I mean, you might come out the other side much better. Next year, money's coming off the books with Scherzer and Verlander. As long as, and if Verlander doesn't hit an innings number, it's even all the money's off the books. I think if he throws a certain amount of innings, all the money comes off the books. And, you've got a bunch of pieces to rebuild and attack next year with big time money, which the owner has now that money's coming off the books. And within a year, you might look like a completely different team. All these prospects coming up, you've rebuilt the team a little bit. And you've spent in free agency, which obviously we all know Juan Soto is going to be a free agent. There's a bunch of starting pitching in the free agent market. Like, you could see this team revamped, where maybe not winning right away necessarily next year, but the organization could be in such good standing with a thriving farm system an owner now with the ability to spend, no longer with all dead money on the books, no longer in the upper thresholds of the luxury tax. Like, you could turn this team around relatively quick, and now you know you have a proven GM who's done it before, who has built the Milwaukee Brewers into a thriving organization, who is still winning now without him. And not only did he build it, we talked about Theo Epstein the other day and, you know, what he did with the Red Sox and what he did with the Cubs. You felt like he left the Cubs in bad standing, where, you know, Stearns, although he wasn't the GM last year, so now it's 2 years removed, but he clearly left this team built with a blueprint and a formula and a core that is a good winning program out in Milwaukee. And if you can bring the Milwaukee way, trading all these assets that you've acquired for one-year deals, turn them into assets, turn them into pieces that you can either trade yourself back again next year when you're looking at an offseason or a trade deadline next year, or use it to stock your team, as well as spend the money of the richest owner in baseball, that's what you're looking for. That's the Met dream. The Met dream is to have a young, thriving farm system where there's enough prospects to come up and play, enough prospects to trade, and the money of Steve Cohen to add and supplement in free agency, as opposed to be what you've been the last handful of years, which is just spending money. And so you're right on the precipice of that, and it's going to be a fine line for the New York Mets on where they get and how close they get. Because I'll tell you right now, if they are in the exact same position come trade deadline, if a couple of days out of the trade deadline they are in the exact same position, this position that you're looking at right now, three games out, but having to jump 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams, they will trade everyone. Now, I know the big question is Alonso, and that will take over this station for a while, and how they go about trading Pete Alonso or their thought process on Pete Alonso. And I think McNeil, if they could ever get him going well, would be an absolute conversation and someone they could absolutely move. I think that contract is reasonable if he can get his act together. But it's not even just that. It's all the other ancillary pieces that you can figure out a way to bring something back for. You can get a good prospect for J.D. Martinez. You can get a good prospect for Severino. You might not get a team's best. You might not get what you got from Max Scherzer. Now, again, and it's not like money. You don't have the ability to eat up the last years of a contract and make it even more enticing for a team with J.D. Martinez as a free agent at the end of the year. You don't have the ability to buy out the rest of Severino's contract. He's a free agent. So you can't play that game that he played last year that other owners aren't willing to play. You don't have that advantage with some of these players. But for me, I look at last night and I go, keep it up, J.D. I look at last night and I go, every fifth day, Sevy. Because you could easily see them trading everybody and reshaping this organization within a year or two. Because that's the dream. The dream is start from scratch, start building this thing. You've already seen the starting rotation and the starting pitching prospects be much better than you thought. For a team that you went into the offseason with, you know, Acuna and all the other, you know, big-time prospects, their outfielders and infielders, like their hitters, and you thought the pitching was kind of in, you know, disarray, and you've seen Scott and so on, like the starting pitching is actually better inside the organization than you thought. The pitching is actually better. So now if you can add more prospects to that, maybe you can trade away. You can, like, you are within a year of having the stable farm system and the money of the richest owner in baseball. Or you could chase it. And I think they would have to get into a position much better than they are right now for this owner to pass up on trading. For him to attack the trade deadline any other way than selling off the assets, I'm telling you, I think the Mets would have to be far better than they are right now. But there is a number. There is a amount of wins. So if you are a Met fan who believes playoffs are special, which I am a Yankee fan who believes playoffs are special, and I want to chase every single year, and I believe there's always a chance to win. I mean, the Dodgers have been terrible in the postseason. You saw the Diamondbacks make it to the World Series last year. There is always hope in some way. So if they get to a point where they're right there, you will make this decision for Stearns. He will not flout and pass up the opportunity to make the playoffs. He will not just dismiss it. He will not look at it and go, hey, we're a half a game out, only one team ahead of us. It doesn't matter. I want to trade. I don't think he will. I don't think you can. I don't think you can pass that up. So the Mets, heading into a stretch, as I told you before, looking at the schedule, for the next month leading into the All-Star break, it is nothing but teams under 500 besides a two-game series against the Yankees. Now, some of the teams aren't terrible. The Texas Rangers aren't terrible. The Chicago Cubs aren't terrible. But, you know, they all have better records than the Mets, but they are under 500. You have to see one winning team between now and the All-Star game. You have to figure out a way to make some hay here. You have to figure out a way to keep this momentum up. You have to figure out a way. And so far, so good. 8 out of the last 12, 4 series now without a series loss, and an enormous win in walk-off fashion last night from J.D. Martinez to avoid losing a series to the lousy Marlins. You take 2 out of 3 from Miami, and you move on to San Diego, and you hope to start building upon this thing, and you see if Lindor can help you. You see if Alonso can wake up. You see if Nimmo can actually get going. They tried to get him going by hitting him second. Didn't have a great day. But ultimately, this Met team is right on the precipice of who they're going to be. Are you going to be a team that chases it? Or are you going to be a team that the future is now? 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. AJ in South Jersey. What's up, AJ?
Hey, C-Mac. How are you?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Yeah, I met you a couple of years ago by the Yankee game when Craig got you those tickets with Keith behind the stadium.
Oh, but, sure, yeah, me and the Yankees Met game, sure. I remember it well.
Yeah, you've moved up since then, so it's nice.
Yes, I have. I suppose I've moved all the way up to 2 a.m. You betcha.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good. It is pretty good. I'm pretty excited.
I want to talk about a couple things. First of all, I don't know if you were joking or not. You said you'll take Mariano out of retirement. Today I'm saying there's a reason why you retired. You sounded pretty serious.
I wasn't that serious, no. But I said I would take him from his car dealership. No, I wasn't. I'll take Clay Holmes on tomorrow again in Fenway over a retired Mariano. I was just trying to make a point, Just trying to make a point.
I happen to be with you 100% that Clay Holmes, you're right, he came up as like a medium leverage reliever, but he really played very well. I feel like he gets a little too much hate, you know?
Completely
agree.
So I'm
with you 100% of that. What?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's ridiculous that off this blown save yesterday that the storyline of he can't be the closer, they need to do better, the bullpen's a major problem. But I looked, honestly, I know it was one play, but it's been a couple. I look at Rizzo, and that Rizzo play pisses me off more than the entire loss does.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I'm saying Rizzo did have a little, I'm saying we have to be a little soft in him. He went through a little leukemia story when he was a younger guy, but I guess everyone has their time, you know? But, I do agree with you to an extent with Rizzo that, like, if he's not playing well, then we got to see what's going on. But I wanted to talk about Aaron Rodgers.
Sure.
What was that?
Sure. Aaron Rodgers. Go ahead.
Aaron Rodgers, I'm saying last year, like, he got, like, injured, like, 4 plays in, and I feel like this year, like, is there, like, a serious backup plan what's going to happen with him, like, if he gets injured again? Because odds are, it looks like he's still recovered, but when you're in such a situation like this, there's high odds that it happens again. I'm wondering, like, last year they were completely unprepared, and you have to be a little unprepared when you have, like, a 40-year-old quarterback. You know, even though he could be on top of his game, but the risk of injury is high, I feel like you don't want the whole Jets season just hinging on that. Like, what do you hold? Do they have a real backup option?
No, I mean, the backup plan is Tyrod Taylor, first off. That's the backup quarterback. They've revamped the offensive line, bringing in, you know, major veterans, including, you know, a Hall of Famer, left tackle. They've added a weapon in Williams at wide receiver. The plan is to go out there and attack this thing. I mean, the backup plan for Aaron Rodgers, I mean, is there a backup plan? What was the backup plan for Tom Brady? Brian Hoyer? Like, what's the backup plan for the great Blaine Gabbert in Tampa? Like, there is no backup plan for Aaron Rodgers going down. There is no backup plan. They can still be a somewhat successful team, but they won't have the real aspirations or possibility of being a championship team that they have with Aaron Rodgers, or at least in my estimation, they have with Aaron Rodgers. So there is no, you have to hope he stays healthy. Now, I think Tyrod Taylor is a great backup, and they're in a position where if it's a, you know, not every injury is season ending. I know that's what we have, you know, that's the taste in our mouth left over from last year. He might just go down, you know, he might go down with an elbow injury that lasts 3 weeks. He might have a high ankle sprain. He's out a month. He might have, you know, an injury where he's just gone for a short period of time, and that's where Tyrod Taylor comes in, because you'll need someone just to keep you afloat, win a couple of games. You know, if he starts 5 games and goes 2-3, you're happy with it, just to get you in a position to where you'll still be in the mix when Aaron Rodgers comes back. So, yeah, Aaron Rodgers might get hurt. If it's season ending, you could forget it all. Then you blow up the whole thing game time. But even if he misses some time, you got Tyrod Taylor holding the fort, should still be good enough defensively, still with you know, Breece Hall and Garrett. And, you know, this offense plus the defense, hopefully Haason Reddick signs a contract, comes in and can get after the quarterback. And you should be good enough to get through a couple of weeks. That's the plan. There really is no other plan. The plan is for Aaron Rodgers to stay healthy and lead you through the playoffs. And lead you to a division title, or certainly at least a playoff appearance. And then hopefully you have Aaron Rodgers on this team. There is no backup plan for missing Aaron Rodgers. There's no backup plan for any of these quarterbacks. There's no backup plan for Mahomes. There's no backup plan for Trevor Lawrence, who just, we'll get to it in a little bit, just signed an amazing contract where I believe he's the third highest paid quarterback in the NFL right now. There's no backup plan. Those guys go down, you're screwed. That's why you have all the rules that we hate. That's why you can't touch the quarterback, because the product goes to crap without them. The Bengals aren't going to win anything if Burrow is hurt. Plain and simple. The great Kansas City Chiefs and Andy Reid might be able to figure out a way to win 9-plus games, but if he goes down 4 plays in like Aaron Rodgers did, c'est la vie. So there is no plan. Now, to speak to Aaron Rodgers, Fliegelman just told me about the Sauce Gardner tweet that I didn't see. So 4 hours ago, which I guess is what, 10 o'clock at night? If I'm doing quick math here. Are y'all really making a big deal because a 15-plus year Hall of Fame QB missed 2 days of practice after being with the team all throughout phase 1, 2, and 3 of OTAs? And GGs, which I'm assuming is God is good, or I don't know. GGs. I don't know what that means. But he's 100%.
Maybe good game?
Good game.
I think it's like a gaming term.
Okay. Only because his pinned tweet is...
And by gaming, I obviously mean like online gaming.
Right. Yeah. He's 100% right. He's 100% right. And as much as anyone wants to tell you, I'm sorry, as much as Boomer wants to tell you or anybody else who's ever been on a team, I understand it. I understand it. It's different for different people. This team with Aaron Rodgers, and he's 100% right. He was there through phase 1, 2, and 3 of OTAs. He's a 15-year Hall of Famer. He missed 2 days of practice. He literally knows the offense. I mean, he pretty much is the offense. That, you want to talk about quotes from last year? One of my favorites was Garrett Wilson last year telling you that, you know, do you think, when asked if he thinks Aaron Rodgers can step right in and fix the offense, he said Aaron Rodgers is the offense. He literally is the offense. He knows the offense like he knows himself, which I suppose isn't that great because he needs to go into a dark room to come up with life-answering questions. But that life question answers. But sorry, he missed a couple of days. It is the biggest non-story ever. We get all up in a tizzy about it. It means absolutely nothing. Sauce Gardner is telling you the exact thing. That is the exact way. Sauce Gardner is not alone in his thinking. That is how every member of the team views it. He has been there from day one doing everything he can to endear himself to this team, to be the leader of the team, to show these guys he's there for them. Everything he possibly could. And these 2 days of practice, for whatever reason, for vacation, for a hopscotch tournament, it doesn't matter. That's how that entire team feels about him. The defense recognizes the greatness, and the offense knows he is the entire offense. And he doesn't need to be there for two meaningless practices in June. And it's just ridiculous to claim otherwise. Now, you could have a discussion about how the Jets handled it, but the idea that you question how all in he is or how much this is going to impact the team, it's not going to impact them one bit. Did he say, I'd rather do something else than be with the Jets? Yes, he did. Once. And no one cares. Ralph in New Haven, my man Ralph, what's going on? I got a perfect idea. I got a perfect idea, Ralph. I bet you Bryce Harper could close for the Yankees. If we could only figure out a way to get Bryce. He had Tommy John with his right. He could probably just throw it his other arm and figure it out.
I actually caught the tail end of it, and I agree with your concept of whether you're a hard-throwing strikeout pitcher or whether you are a half-speed thrower. The key is to get a person out.
That's out. Get the outs.
Who cares which way you get them out?
I completely agree.
I'm not against that. I mean, I'm going to give you two.
But the argument is, to play devil's advocate, while I agree with what you're saying, the devil's advocate argument is, well, I don't need anybody's help if I strike them out. If I put it in play, I have to rely on other people to do their jobs.
Yeah,
eventually, totally. I want less people involved. The less people involved, the better. Strikeouts are the most efficient way to get the outs, which is hard to argue. It's the truth.
I totally agree. And then there's been guys in the past where, now I'm going to give you two of them, and one of them was a Philly, okay?
Okay.
Juan Benitez was a hard-throwing pitcher, a relief pitcher.
Yeah.
But he threw it directly down the heart of the plate.
There's a million of those. Kyle Farnsworth is another one that I always think of.
I'm going to give you Mitch Williams. I actually went to the series in 1983.
I was going
to say. All three games I went there. And I had to watch Mitch implode in the fourth game.
Yes.
We're up 6-2. When they brought him in, and I told the guy next to me, I said, we're losing. He said, wait a minute, we're up 6-2. I said, we are going to lose, and we're not going to win the series anyway. I said, Toronto's just got a better all-around team. We're not going to beat them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when they brought him in and Carter hit the home run, I told the kid, when Carter hit that ball, it went through the TV set, went into my living room, and it's still ricocheting in my house every night. I said, when I go home. How bad that home run killed me that day. And I knew for Gosi, he was burnt out already. Every time he came in, if it was 0-0, it was automatically 2-0. He could not get the ball over the plate. It was when they called him Wild Thing. Yeah, Key World was wild, not Thing.
Right.
He was always wild, you know. So, and I think people get caught up in a hard throwing. I think they do the same thing with batting. Like, I had a friend of mine. Oh, this guy hits moonshots. I forget who the player was. He hits the ball. I said, does it matter if he hits the ball 400 something feet or he hits it two rows over? Two feet over the fence. Does it really matter if that one guy hits 25 home runs, but the next guy hits 35 and gets more RBIs, but only hit the ball 2 feet over the fence? I don't care. He's still hitting. It's a home run.
Right.
It still doesn't matter. I just hate that we get caught up. I'm going to see. Just give me one more thing. There was a pitcher back. I'm 63. I just turned 63 yesterday, actually.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah. Awesome. There was a guy who pitched for the Pittsburgh Pirates years ago, Kent DeColvey. Now, if you've seen a picture of Kent DeColvey, you would say this guy can't even play hopscotch, right? And he played those years he played for the Pirates. This guy came in and he threw a ball. I think his arm movement, his arm was 6 inches off the ground when you threw it. They couldn't hit him. Mm-hmm. They didn't throw the ball past. I don't think he threw the ball over 80 miles an hour. And I'm thinking, I'll take that pitcher anytime. And I'm going to give you credit. I've seen Goose Gossage pitch, right? Everybody talks about Mariano is a freak. He's one of the best ever.
He
broke more backs than anybody, too.
Yeah.
Right? Look, I seen Goose Gossage pitch in New York. And then 2 years later, me and my buddy flew out to California. And we got tickets to an Angel game. They were playing the Yankees. Now, I was sitting at the end of the game, people had left, and I was in the New York game. I was sitting maybe 10 rows away. I said, God, you can hear this mitt pop like crazy up here. But I'm saying I'm close. I'm dead center in California, 15 rows back, and you can hear the pop, the mitt pop, just as it did. It was in New York. That's how hard Goose was.
Yeah.
And Goose wouldn't need a what do they call that now, a timing where you got to pitch before 7 seconds.
Yeah,
he would
pitch
get the
clock.
Ball back and just it was amazing.
Well, yeah, no, and thank you for the call. They all, you know, it's a different world. You go back and watch the old World Series, and it's amazing how fast they got the ball and threw it. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to devalue strikeouts. Like, strikeouts are important. And ultimately, you do want swinging. You would love it. I mean, I guess the optimal closer is the guy who comes in and strikes everybody out. Sure, why not? But find me that guy. Show him, show me where he is, and then show me how the Yankees acquire him. Because there are no relievers, there aren't many relievers better than Clay Holmes. There really aren't. And if they are, they're going to be too difficult to acquire. Clay Holmes is the closer of the New York Yankees until he pitches his way out of it. And if you think he's earned his way out of the closer role by how he's gone about his business, you are out of your mind. Out of your mind. He's been great. He's been great. And he doesn't need to strike people out. And I've proved it to you already.
World Series over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
The most successful team in the history of professional sports. Starting the new millennium, the New York Yankees are once again world champions.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 12:37, McMonagle here with you. 888-808-1019. You know how much I love movie trailers, and I just watched one. Right there during the break. What a job I have. Watching movie trailers, yelling about Mariano Rivera, Clay Holmes. But I guess, and this one I found interesting, because when I first saw the story of the movie, it made me kind of chuckle a little bit. But Matt Damon has a heist movie set in Boston coming out called The Instigators. I guess it's going to be on Apple Plus. Now, I don't know. Call me what, I don't know. But Matt Damon, Ben Affleck did The Town. It's a heist movie set in Boston. He's going to do, I'm sure the particulars are different. I just watched the trailer. It is. He's a Marine down on his luck who's forced to do this to provide for his family. He's not a part of a criminal conspiracy that they constantly are doing heists, and you know he wants to get out, but one more score, like The Town. The Town was an excellent movie with Ben Affleck. But I'm sorry, if you're Matt Damon and you are connected to Ben Affleck in the way you are, where you're doing Dunkin' Donuts commercials with him, and you guys obviously wrote Good Will Hunting together, and you won the Oscar together, famously. You've done a bunch of movies together. You guys are best friends. Everybody knows Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. They go together like lamb and tuna fish. If you prefer spaghetti and meatballs, that works too. But they go together. And so now you are going to come out with a heist movie set in Boston after one of the real and only one of the like two critical successes Ben Affleck's ever had is like Argo and The Town. That's it. And I'm trying to think of other critical success. Like you said, he's made some money, I suppose. And I like Ben Affleck. I think he gets a bad rap. But how many critical, like successful movies has Ben Affleck made? I'm trying to think. Like where everyone liked it. Like Argo, no doubt, won the Oscar. I think The Town is like the only other one, unless I'm missing something. And you're going to come out as your as best as his best. Like as soon as I saw it, I said, "How can you come out with a heist movie out of Boston? You just can't do it." Can't do it. It's too specific. Now, I know Ben Affleck has made The Accountant, where it's sort of a Jason Bourne type thing. Not really, but close enough. Now, you could do multiple Jason Bourne type movies where you're a former CIA or whatever, and you kick ass and car chases and all that stuff. But like stealing something, a heist movie set directly in Boston, where I just watched the trailer, he's walking through Fenway Park, the whole bit. Fenway Park. If you ever saw the movie The Town, Fenway Park is a major part of it. It's where the final heist like takes place. You can't have a heist movie set at Fenway Park 10 years later being his best friend. I'm sorry, you can't do it. I'm sure it'll be good, but... And I like both of them. Can't do it. I actually saw a list from my man Craig that had... He put out movies you can't change the channel on. And I've always thought about this. Like, I think about this all the time. Movies that... Now, in my life, now it's completely different. I have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. I have to do things... I had another flag football game last night. Nothing as entertaining as his play action pass rollout touchdown throw of the first game of the season. More just straightforward today. But yeah, I got to go do things. So the idea of not being able to turn off the TV or change the channel, I work in the middle of the morning. I wake up in the afternoon. I have 2 hours where I play dad, then I put baseball on. So I haven't watched a movie in weeks, months. I haven't watched a movie. But I always thought about movies that you don't turn off. And when I think of them, I think of the TNT movies. Like, it not only is it a movie you don't turn off, but it's got to be a movie good enough that you will sit through the commercials on TNT or TBS or USA or, I don't know, whatever. American Movie Class, AMC, whatever. Movies that you will not turn off. So I'll steal a thing from Craig, because Good Will Hunting was on his list. That's what made me think of it. But for me, numero uno on movies I will not change if I'm sitting on the couch flipping through the channels. Doesn't matter what it could be on Spike TV, whatever. If there's commercials, it doesn't matter. I am not changing it. Number one, A Few Good Men. You do not change A Few Good Men. You watch A Few Good Men the entire way through, up until the end scene, which I happen to know every word of, and maybe one day I'll do it for you. But you do not change A Few Good Men. The other, number two, Shawshank Redemption. You don't change Shawshank. Now, it's very rarely going to be a comedy. Like, you got to think of those movies when you're home from school, flipping through the channels. I'm not thinking comedies. I'm thinking dramas that you can't change the channel. Number two, Shawshank Redemption. You do not change Shawshank Redemption. You just don't. And it's also got to be movies, because here's the other thing about these movies. I'm thinking TNT, TBS. So it can't be like Pulp Fiction. Right? I love Pulp Fiction. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I like Quentin Tarantino movies. I think he's great. Love Pulp Fiction. It's not going to be on this list because you can't watch it on TNT. You can't watch it. Commercials and all the curses and everything bleeped out. You can't. It's not on this list. It's a great movie, but you can't watch a Quentin Tarantino film on USA on a Saturday afternoon in your underwear. You can't. It doesn't fit. I'm talking about flipping through the channels, catching a movie, and then you're just stuck on it. You were open to anything. You were open to bowling. You were open to a cooking show. You would diners, drive-in, and dives. Like, you were open to anything. Flipping through, suddenly you stop on this movie, and now I'm watching the movie. Here's the only movie, number three, that sort of is tough because of the cursing, but ultimately so good, and you can get through it with the bleeping and changing things, is Usual Suspects. One of the great swerves of all time at the end of Usual Suspects. I could watch Usual Suspects all day. Now, it hurts it, especially the lineup scene. I think sometimes I've even seen it where they cut out the lineup scene because there's so much cursing. The line is, you know, give me the keys, you blank and bleep bleeper. Can't do that. There's another movie that is on this list that's borderline, right on the borderline of just making it through. It's tough. But for whatever reason, it doesn't bother me as much as some other movies. Number four, You can get through Casino with Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci on TNT or CBS, and sometimes they play it on those channels. You can get through it with the dubbing and, you know, filling in the curse words with other things. You can get through it. There's some movies you can, some movies you can't. Casino, you can get through. So I got A Few Good Men. Let's just stop it at four. I probably have more I can do off the top of my head. A Few Good Men, Shawshank Redemption, Usual Suspects, Casino. And you listen, you could always throw in The Godfather. Right? They'll do the specials on AMC. If you catch The Godfather, you got to stop. So I'll put The Godfather number five. Either one or two. Obviously not three. What do you think I am, a moron? Fleegs, top of your head, scrolling through, catching. Now, it has to be on TNT or TBS where the commercials come into play, not HBO.
Yeah, see, like, that makes some movies, like, Shawshank fits. Like, they're a movie, to me,
yeah,
like, Goodfellas, it's no, out because you Goodfellas can't possibly is too much. Watch it yeah. with the changes.
I feel like I can get through Casino. Goodfellas is too much.
I'm thinking, because you made a reference to this while I was out filling up my water.
Yeah.
Big Daddy.
Big Daddy.
For me.
Yeah, no, listen, I think comedies are a unique, a different thing.
Well, they're shorter, yes. Even with the commercials,
right.
And yeah.
Yes, but yeah, Big Daddy is tremendous.
But like, again, like if it's like a TNT movie, I'm more likely to lean something that's PG-13 versus R.
Right.
Because, you know, a movie like The Hangover, you right. try to sit through that on FX, it's like, this sucks.
Right.
Yeah, Shawshank is the obvious one. I don't even know. I guess, yeah, there's not enough that's different in The Godfather. I guess I could still, yeah. as The Godfather,
you make
it
through. The Godfather, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, Shawshank, A Few Good Men is another great run for me. I love A Few Good Men. Don't take that out of context. Someone's going to take that. I love A Few Good Men.
Back to the Future is one for me.
No doubt. And yeah, listen, Lord of the Rings is my favorite movie. So Lord of the Rings too.
Harry Potter. I was just the right. Harry Potter is one for me.
You know, we haven't done that, by the way, now that you mentioned that. How was your trip to London?
It was outstanding. Scotland first, then London. I loved it, and I'm not the biggest international travel person, but I would 100% go back to London.
And so you went to Scotland first?
Yeah,
and
that was for the Taylor Swift concerts.
You saw her once or you saw her twice?
Twice. There were three shows. We went to the first two.
Okay. Both in Scotland?
Yeah. Same state. There's a giant rugby stadium there.
Right. Okay. So just for that, just for the two nights, did you do anything else there?
We did a bunch there, and I loved it. Like, I would recommend for anybody to go there. We did. We were in Edinburgh, so we did the castle the first day. Then we did, there's a place, Dean Village, walk around. There's Colton Hill. We did all of that. It's just, like, I did it. I did it the once. I saw it. I don't know if I have to go back, whereas London, even some of the stuff I did once, I might be interested in doing again, and there's so much, because it's such a giant city, we were only there for 48 hours, so there's a lot I didn't get to do, including see the Mets and Phillies second
game. I was going to say, so how much of a pull was it? Did it cross your mind? Did you have to fight yourself? Was there ever like, hell, what the hell, I'm here, I might as well, we got to try and figure it out.
No, well, it was part of the original like plan was to go.
Right. Because it's kind of, I
even heard
that was
the biggest reason we got an early flight from Edinburgh down to London on Sunday, but I waited too long. I'd been looking at this Harry Potter door every day to find like tickets, and there was, you know, everything was available. They have like half hour slots from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Right.
And every day, I'm checking for weeks, only the first slot is sold out. Everything else, it's available. I don't check for 2 days, you know, Memorial Day week or the weekend after that, I have a wedding. I come back 2 days later, and there's only one slot available Sunday night at 6 o'clock. You got to leave like 4:30 to get there.
Right.
So during the game, game was out.
Game was out. Okay. Because I even heard the morning show kind of amazed that you would go all the way there and not check out the Mets.
No, listen, like, again, that was the original
just
plan.
That was the plan, right.
I can see the Mets anywhere. That Harry Potter studio tour, which was,
right.
We were there for 4.5 hours.
No,
like,
amazing.
That
I'm
I
sure
can only
cool.
do there.
So let me ask you a question. But all right, so the trip was the trip initially spurred because of the Met game, or was it the concerts?
Mostly concerts, but both. There were a couple weekends I was eyeing for the concerts. Part of the draw here was to be able to do both.
Right. And
and for whatever reason, it was $1,000 cheaper to fly back from London than it was from Scotland.
Really? Well, then you fly back from London.
Right.
And how was the food overall?
It was good. I know it's fine.
That's
I'm there and I
point,
see the
obviously.
Steve Cohen thing blowing up.
Yeah.
Listen, the food was good. We went to the pubs. It was like walking into any, you know, bar here, and that's what we did. We're in London, so we just went to a bunch of pubs.
Burgers and such?
Which no? I miss that. Sorry.
Oh, so burgers, fish and chips.
Yeah. Burgers. Like, which, you know, trying the house beer wherever you went. And,
right.
You know.
Right. Nice.
No, so it was great. So I don't know. You know, if Steve Cohen was fine dining. If there's private chefs in London, well, he knows about.
That's what I've heard. I've heard that. Like the way you did it, a straight pub or whatever, that it's not quite up to New York or other standards. But if you want to look for fine dining, you can get an excellent steakhouse or an excellent restaurant that's as good as anywhere in the world.
Yeah, we were focused on, you know, what's going to be quick and not, you know, we already spent enough money.
How much butter beer did you have?
Never enough. That's the answer. we went at the tour. You can eat before or in the middle or after. We ate in the middle, and they had, you know, the food, and they have butter beer, they have ice cream, they had a sharing flight, which is what I got. So it's, you know, one cup of butter beer, like maybe like 8 to 10, not a ton. Mm-hmm. The cup of ice cream, basically like a scoop and a half, and then the cupcake, which was small. Like if you go to the mini ones at the supermarket, it was that size with butter beer frosting. And so I get the flight, I'm there with my sister. She had remembered, we went to, you know, Universal when the Harry Potter World first opened over a decade ago. And she remembered getting it. We got the non-frozen one. It got warm. She remembered not liking it. She didn't remember a few years later when we got the frozen one. It was great. So I order it. She's like, I don't need it. She gets the water with dinner, whatever. She tries a sip of mine. I could see it in her face. As soon as she's like, oh, no. She ended up going back up to get another one. So I had just the one glass, but along with it, one entire thing of ice cream and one cupcake. So I don't know how much you would count that as. And it was all in one sitting because, again, we had to, this was it. This was the opportunity.
That's funny.
But as you know, if you've had it in Orlando, butterbeer is incredible.
Yeah. No, butterbeer is good. I had it in California.
Universal there too.
Universal in California when I went on my honeymoon. I went to Hawaii and we stopped in San Diego for a little bit. And we went to the Universal out there and had some butterbeer. It was good. Universal's fun. I still think the kids are a little bit young to take it to Universal. The little guy probably
when
can't go on any of the rides.
Teenage years or even preteen, that's when, like I remember for me, that's when Universal became better than Disney.
Yeah. And that'll eventually happen. I don't think
you'll have the trips yet where you're doing both. You're staying at one resort, taking the shuttle or the Uber to another.
Yeah. No, we're going probably going back to Disney at the end of this year, which, by the way, if you guys are anyone out there interested in booking a Disney trip, my wife can help you. She is a travel agent who specializes in Disney trips. So you can hit me up on Twitter, send me a direct message or something. I'll send you her email. You guys can book your trips to Disney World. You better get on that if you're going to do it this summer, that's for sure. I want to just real quick before we go to break, three more movies that jumped out at me as movies you can't change. Lethal Weapon, but two. Lethal Weapon 2, when he's going up against the South African diplomat. That's the best Lethal Weapon. And then Indiana Jones 3, The Last Crusade with Sean Connery, by far my favorite Indiana Jones.
I'd put Raiders of the Lost Ark there, too.
Yeah. No, they're both great, but my personal favorite, Indiana Jones. They're all great. They're all great. But I love the third one with
Sean Connery. Would you put any of the Star Wars there?
No. Nope.
I agree with you.
No. There's not a single Star Wars
movie
there.
I'll say this because I'm sure I'm also going to get a text from Eric and Ron Konkama.
Yeah.
I could put a lot of Marvel movies there. I'll put, though, for just superhero, The Dark Knight and Avengers Infinity War Endgame.
Yes. Well, listen, The Dark Knight for sure. Dark Knight's in my opinion, is the best superhero movie of the bunch.
And you don't really lose anything with it being on regular TV.
Not as much. No, you're right. And then I think Arnold Schwarzenegger is another one who might be like the king of this. There's a bunch of movies. I always... Because in my mind, I'm probably going to the movies I remember the most on TNT and different things. So like for whatever reason, like Last Action Hero jumps in my mind as a movie that was always on TNT.
There's probably a lot of movies that would fit this, but they weren't on cable TV as much, so we don't associate them with that.
Right.
Like we jumped to, you think of The Godfather, I thought of Back to the Future and Shawshank, because they are, even still, they're always on.
Always on TNT, yep. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Ray Thomas, we'll get to your calls. I promise you we'll have some fun with some movie talk. Obviously, the baseball, we'll get to Trevor Lawrence and his contract and what that could mean for ramifications of all the other quarterbacks around the league, Dak Prescott included. As I guess I saw Evan and Tiki bantering back and forth about whether Dak Prescott could be the future quarterback of the New York Giants. Don't they know? Don't they know that Daniel Jones is the quarterback of the New York Giants? I don't understand. What are we talking about? Daniel Jones has solidified that spot, if you ask me. I don't know. Call me crazy.